Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Scoop on a Monday, April 7th. It's great to see everybody. Jessica, I'm so glad you were able to make it. Jessica says she blocks the time on her calendar for work, but still somehow there's an intrusion during Scoop time. And I know, Jessica, you were watching Scoop from the side of, was it a practice of some sort for your kiddos? It's always interesting to see where we're consuming news, isn't it? That it's all over the place these days. And it's one of the reasons why we created Smarter News is that I didn't feel like the traditional broadcast really worked for anyone anymore. I love the idea of being able to take a break and sit down and watch the news. It's just not what our lifestyle is like. And so how do we develop something that's quick and easy and to the point and meets you seamlessly throughout your day? And that's what we're attempting to do here with Smarter News. And you're such a big part of it. So thank you so much for joining us. I see so many new names on the live chat. It's great to see you, Barbara and Jeremy and Sarah and Natalia. We have some familiar faces. We have some new faces. Crystal, great to see you, and Janelle all over the country. And I'm so curious for your thoughts. And I really want to talk with you through this broadcast. Obviously, one of the big news items, and the news item that we're going to focus on today, is really about tariffs. It is the news of the week. And it's not a topic that is served well in 30-second sound bites. And because most of social media is really built on those, you know, 3, 5, 6, 10-second sound bites, we're getting parts of the story. And I don't want to shrug off all of the story. You know, there's some things that you can capture. When you see the markets move in a time-lapse video, that's showing you a part of the story. But it's not really serving this story well because it's more complicated than really what the headlines are talking about, which mainly focus on the tariffs, trade, and the stock market. And one of the things that I did this past weekend and tends to be my mode of operandi is that when things get really cluttered, when the news gets really loud, I tend to get really quiet, which isn't necessarily the wisest business decision, I should mention, when you're trying to, you know, capture people online and you want to make sure to say, hey, come and listen to Smarter News. But it's necessary because we have to really think about what we're seeing in front of us. And oftentimes when you just listen to people, you get a part of the story that you're seeing isn't really highlighted. I mean, that's really one of my big lessons from broadcast news. Here I went into broadcast news as a young journalist thinking so much about how do I look on television? How am I presenting on television? And all of that does matter. It's not that the visual doesn't matter, but after years and years of interviews in live television, one of the things I can say with confidence is the most important skill you can have as a journalist, and honestly, I believe as a person, is the ability to aggressively listen. And really listen to what people are saying, because most of the time, unless they're a fabulous liar, and sometimes they are, they're really telling you the truth. And it's already there in front of you. And the best thing we can do is respond to what someone's authentically sharing with us. So what I did today is I tried to pull a lot of sound for you because I want you to hear what people are saying. You know, what are we really saying when we're talking about tariffs? But let me start off with a couple basics because this week is really important when it comes to just the calendar. And although the tariffs were announced last week, we have a little bit of a rollout. So there were tariffs that went into effect this weekend. There was that first announcement, or I shouldn't say first, but there's several different announcements. I probably shouldn't put them in a row as 1, 2, and 3. They're more like bullet points. So we had a 10% minimum tariff announced by President Trump last week. So didn't matter where you are in the world, didn't matter really what's going on. If you're a trading partner of the United States, you're going to get a 10% tariff. What's a 10% tariff? What is a tariff? We know a tariff is a tax on imports. We can say that a million times, but most of the time you and I are not paying a tax on imports. So I think it's important to just to reflect on that, unless we're an importer, unless we actually know what that is. And we've talked to a few folks that are actually importing things for their business. So they're paying that tax. They're paying that tax in order for a product to come into the United States and be part of the US economy. So 10% minimum tariff across the board. That went into effect on April 5th. So over the weekend on a midnight, there was kind of, it's kind of like Cinderella with all of these things. it depends on how you look at it, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But you have a midnight deadline and suddenly these tariffs are in effect. So we do have that 10% basic tariff across the board that's in effect. But then on Wednesday, so it's April 7th, April 8th is Tuesday, April 9th is Wednesday. And at midnight on Wednesday, we have reciprocal tariffs going into effect. So that would be the big tariffs, if you will, that could be placed on different trading partners like China. Now, China has responded and said they are going to put tariffs in response to us. And those tariffs could come into place on April 10th. So you see there's a rollout here. So just be aware of that as these different tariffs come into place. And there's a question of, well, will the tariffs happen? Will they not happen? Is President Trump really going to go through with it? Is there a last minute negotiation that could stop it? You could see a myriad of different storylines emerge this week. So I just want to make you aware of that. The president has been asked, and so has different members of the administration, you know, is this really going to happen? Is this really happening? That's been one of the big questions that we've seen in the news. Like, is he really for real? I want to show you something. This is a chart. You know, Wall Street's not a great use of information if we're looking to make kind of these very specific observations about different parts of the story. What Wall Street will tell us is whether or not there's a concern about the economy. We'll learn that from the way that different trades are made. But one of the things I shared last week is a lot of the trades on Wall Street now are automatic. They're through AI. If there's large portions of money being moved throughout the market, or the market hits a certain point, sometimes it'll automatically trigger a trade, which can lead to more sell-offs or more buys. And so instead of it being real people all the time making these decisions, it's not. It also can be machines. And so we have to be really careful of taking emotion from that, because some of it is just triggered by different moves in the market. The reason why I wanted to show you this that's on your screen now is it's a look at the S&P 500. So this is a broad swath of really big companies in the United States. And this is showing us how does this market look? And what it's showing us is from inauguration to just recently over the last several days. And you can see that there's a fall off, a big sell off in the market over the last several days. But you can also see that since inauguration day, it's been fairly choppy. And part of the choppiness has been about an anticipation of tariffs. So although most of the world has woken up to this news of tariffs because it's actually happening in the last week, there was plenty of concerns by investors and other large companies that maybe are not public about this coming. And there's been preparations being made. So it's not just that the markets were just rolling along just fine. Everything was great. It was, you know, high markets and we're partying. It wasn't like that before. There was volatility. There was choppiness in the market. And then it's become more extreme over the last several days. So I wanted to show you that because I thought that was kind of a good dose of reality, is that there's been concern of this overall over the last several weeks. And now it's accelerated because it's going into place. Now, the question is, what's actually going to happen? You know, what's going to actually happen over the next several weeks and several months? And we got some news from the Treasury Secretary over the weekend, from the Commerce Secretary over the weekend, and they've been in tandem talking about that these tariffs are in place. And they're in place not just because of the immediate. It's not just about trade. It's about a broader vision. And that's really what I want to talk to you about today. Before I get to that, though, I want you just to hear from President Trump. And I want you to hear from President Trump, because then I want to share with you the president of the European Commission and what she said this morning. So President Trump is speaking on Air Force One. This is on Sunday night. He's going back to the White House. This is a gaggle. These are questions coming from reporters. And this is some of his responses to questions in general about the tariff. So let's take a listen to this.
So it's unsustainable for us to allow China to have surpluses of $1 trillion. We will be taking in over $1 trillion over the next short period of time with the tariffs that I've already instituted. They're already in place. Now, what's going to happen with the market, I can't tell you, but I can tell you our country has gotten a lot stronger. I don't want anything to go down, but sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something. And we have such a horrible, we have been treated so badly by other countries because we had stupid leadership that allowed this to happen. They took our businesses, they took our money, they took our jobs, they moved it to Mexico, they moved it to Canada, they moved a lot of it to China, and it's not sustainable. We're not going to do it. I've spoken to many countries. They all want to do it. Just so you understand the power of what I'm doing, Every country is calling and being very solicitous of us. Very, very nice. They're being very nice. And we have to be able to justify. This is not sustainable. The United States can't lose $1.9 trillion on trade. We can't do that and also spend a lot of money on NATO in order to protect European nations. We cover them with military, then we lose money on trade. It's the whole thing is crazy. And I got elected on that basis. We explained it.
So that's when the president, he's speaking about what he considers to be the threat to the United States, which is this ballooning debt that we have and imbalances in trade and a relationship that he wants to recalibrate. Now, let's talk a little bit about negotiations, because he mentioned that people are calling him and they're trying to negotiate. So that's why when I listened this morning to the European Commission president, she was holding a press conference sort of unrelated to this. She had this to say. I want you to take a listen.
First and foremost, at immense costs for U.S. consumers and businesses, but at the same time, they have a massive impact on the global economy. Especially hard hit are the developing countries. And this is a major turning point for the United States. Nonetheless, we stand ready to negotiate with the United States. Indeed, we have offered zero for zero tariffs for industrial goods, as we have successfully done with many other trading partners. Because Europe is always ready for a good deal, so we keep it on the table. But we are.
So interesting. So she said last week when she had a very aggressive statement about tariffs and how this would be very damaging for the United States, for the global economy, for the developing world, she didn't mention that exchange of the 0% tariffs on industrial goods, but now she did publicly. So you see how this is starting to roll out. We're already getting indications of that. The president just said that. Negotiations happening. The question is, what does that actually mean? Are there negotiations on tariffs? Is it negotiations about something else? What is happening behind the scenes? And is the White House working towards a variety of different deals that they could announce that they believe will set us on a better economic footing? Many of you have some really interesting questions, and I want to make sure that we continue to answer them throughout the program. So let me share a couple of the things that you're saying here. Jessica is saying, I appreciate his aggressive approach, but I have to say it is a bit nerve-wracking since it's so taboo compared to past precedent. It is true. It's a major change, Jessica. This sort of global world order or trade order that people are talking about has been in place for decades, meaning that there hasn't been major disruption. And actually, that leads me to a really important point that I apologize. I should have started this broadcast with, because I was thinking about it this weekend and I didn't make a note to myself. And here's where I think we really need to start and we can't forget. You are so important to the global economy. Jessica, you're really important to the global economy. Anyone that's listening to this, you're extremely important to the global economy. The U.S. consumer is responsible for most of our economic activity in the largest economy in the world, meaning that the decisions you make on a regular basis, my decision to go into Target this weekend, has a domino effect. And because we are such a juggernaut, because we're a leading economy, there are many countries that want access to us. And our decisions, whether they're at Target one day, the grocery store the next day, has an effect. This is why if we place a tax on imports into this economy, it's causing such alarm overseas, because we really matter. Likewise, not only us buying things matter from abroad, but us selling things abroad also really matters. We're a large market. And there's a couple questions on that about what we export. So because we're a global leader, because your power as a consumer is quite frankly disproportionate to other consumers in the global economy, this is why this is causing such news. It's not just about President Trump changing policy. It's because of you and how much you matter and how much the U.S. economy matters. Regina had a question as well. She said, I'm wondering if there is a point where we should really be concerned about the stock market continuing to fall. What does this mean for our 401k? Let's talk a little bit about the stock market, because as the president was saying, you know, sometimes you need to take your medicine, you know, okay, that's all good and fine, unless you want to take things out of the market, right? Or your compensation is tied to a stock of some sort. or your retirement. So one of the things that you could hear about this week is a bear market. So there's a bull market and there's a bear market. The bear market is a term that you use on Wall Street to describe a 20% fall from the high mark of the market. So whatever that high watermark was is 20% down from that. Now, in a bear market, it's often looked at as a market that's reflecting a tough time, you know, a tough time in the stock market. You'd rather be a bull than a bear. You'd rather be charging with a bull market that is moving and growing and there's a lot of money being made than a bear market that feels like it's retracting. That said, even when I'm saying that out loud, I want to be really cautious because let's say you have a big retirement fund and this bear market, the stocks being lower, enable that fund to buy stocks at a lower price. And you're holding on for a couple of years and those stocks go way back up. So the bear market is actually an opportunity for investors and companies. It doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean it's relaxing to watch. It doesn't mean it's not without alarm or concerns or additional effects. But it's just a symbol that or a saying that is suggesting that we're seeing a market fall from this high. One of the things that we really want to watch here, Regina, is that when a market gets to a lower point, it's interesting because I've seen this a few times during different recessions, financial crisis. I don't want to say there's like a collective agreement, but there was a question even this morning. So this morning we got into work, the markets were falling because markets fell all over the world. And then suddenly the markets had like a little bit of a rally. Suddenly they shot up a couple hundred points and they came back down from that. The reason why people want to pay attention to those little rallies is a question about whether or not investors feel like the market hit the bottom, like the market has appropriately priced in what the risks are. Doesn't seem like we're there yet, but that's what we're kind of watching for, is to see a day where these downward declines sort of stop. And even if they hover at the bottom, you know, they're hovering at a low point, that would be a sign that, well, maybe investors feel like everything's sold off enough. They've priced in this risk of a recession, or priced in risk of what's going on with the U.S. economy. And now they're going to start working in this environment as a new normal. So that's what we're kind of watching for. I hope that's helpful. But I've seen those terms, bear market, bull market, what does this all mean? And I want to make sure that we address that. So the big takeaway from President Trump's comments, though, and I think is really important here, is the way that he's talking about tariffs is the same way that he talked about tariffs last week, which is that this is a national crisis. The current state of the United States economy is not sustainable. That's what he's saying. It's not sustainable. Our trade balances are off. Our debt is too high. We're spending money in places that we should not be spending money. And just to introduce this thought, you know, there's a lot of reference to President Trump as a businessman, but specifically, he's in real estate. And what do you have to be comfortable with in real estate to be successful? You have to be comfortable with debt because oftentimes you're pulling on a lot of debt or loans in order to kind of fund a project. And then maybe you're refinancing and take money out of that project and you're going to move it over here. And all the while you're balancing a lot of debt to try to make it work for you. There's a question here in how the president is approaching this about whether or not there's actually a bigger plan. And instead of it being a question, it's actually something that the Treasury Secretary is talking about more specifically. And I want to play, this is a longer soundbite. Secretary Bessent sat down with Tucker Carlson. I'm putting a link to that in your show notes because I think it's actually a really important interview. And for those of you who maybe Tucker Carlson's not your thing, it's an interesting interview, unique in that Tucker Carlson doesn't really talk a lot through this. It's really Treasury Secretary Bessent. And I found it very useful to having a little bit longer time with him, listening to what he's saying and his background about how he's positioning the United States economy. So take a listen to what he says here.
Commentator asked me, you know, she said, can you guarantee me there won't be a recession? And I said, I can't guarantee you anything. Like, yeah. There's nothing that tells me there should be one. So you know, I believe that this is going to work, just like President Reagan believed that supply side economics was going to work. But what I do know that the old system wasn't working.
I think that's right.
And if you look at a system that's not working, you got to be brave to change it. So what wasn't working? Would it have been really fun for me to come in and just keep issuing a lot of debt? And you know, it's almost like a bodybuilder is taking steroids. Outside looks great. You know, you're muscular. Inside, you're killing your vital organs. Yeah. And that's what was going on here. but it would have been easy to keep pumping up the economy, borrowing a lot of money, creating a lot of government jobs. There was no controversy when we're doing all that. But you were going to end up in a calamity. If you go back and look, you look at the financial crisis in 07, 08, economy looked great right up until then. You go back and you look at the end of the dot-com bubble and then the whole credit problem, the fraud at WorldCom, Enron, some other companies, economy looked great until it didn't. And I think one of the things that we won't get credit for, but that this administration will have done, is avoiding a financial calamity. Think about it, that they've done an analysis that one of the reasons 9/11 happened, because the airlines didn't want to pay for reinforced doors.
Yes.
They kept pushing back. FAA didn't push hard enough. And now, we've got the reinforced doors. So I look at it, we're putting on the reinforced doors before the crash.
What an analogy when you think about it that way. So let's pull off a couple pieces of what he said there, which is he's talking about a calamity. What is he talking about? He's talking about debt. If we think about the debt that this country is carrying, it's over $30 trillion. In fact, let me look it up for you. We could pull it up for you. There's a really fascinating website, U.S. National Debt Clock. It's debtclock.org. And you can pull up here. Let me see if I could present it for you. It'll just start ticking away. And you could actually see your debt per citizen. So right now, we're at over $36.6 trillion of national debt. Debt per citizen comes down to about $107,000. Debt per taxpayer is $323,000. So this every second is ticking up. And we're seeing, you could kind of break down. It's actually a great website to play with a little bit, because it'll show you, how much debt is held by foreign countries. What about what kind of spending are we doing? We're looking at some of our largest budget items like Medicare and Medicaid. So it's sort of interesting to look at. But what this is giving us an idea of is just how much debt we're carrying. At the same time, what Secretary Bessin is talking about is stimulus that has flowed into the economy. That includes money that we've approved for spending. That it includes money that we're printing to try to, again, push into the economy that can also be inflationary. And there's a question of when does this all get called on the carpet? How long can you keep accruing the debt and not have to pay it off? Can you just be in debt forever as the largest economy? Is that actually safe for us? So there's a debt issue that the administration is talking about. If you heard him talk a little bit about jobs there, there's a ballooning of the federal government. And the argument from that side, and there'll be a different point of view, is that we have stimulated too many federal jobs that the economy doesn't really need. And because these jobs are in the federal dole, they're causing the government to work a lot less efficiently. And it's not the free market that is developing these jobs. So these aren't real jobs in the way that the free market is creating them. They're government jobs, and they go in a different category. Again, that's just one way of looking at it. It's not the only way. So this is where DOGE comes in, government efficiency. We're going to streamline the government. We're going to cut out the debt, the extra stuff. We're going to, by releasing these federal workers that should not necessarily have federal jobs, we're going to release them into the private industry at exactly the time that the private industry needs them. When you're going to have U.S. companies searching for workers because of the tariff environment. And there's going to be an incentive, not just for U.S. companies, but foreign companies to build here. And if all of this happens at the same time, we might actually get the government on stronger footing. But that's a lot of things happening at the same time. The flip side of that is that you have very high inflation. There's a reduction of supply, and there's high demand. You have U.S. Consumers paying more for goods coming into the country because the cost has to be passed on. It's not automatic, by the way. In some cases, you could have a good coming into the United States. Let's talk about Emily Lay. We're going to talk about her a little bit later in the program. Emily Lay, who's making those planners, who I did an interview with on our regular podcast, she's saying, I have to import these planners from China, and I have to sell them at a certain margin in order for me to be successful and to add jobs and in order for me to grow. she can make the decision to raise the price of her notebooks, or she could decide that she's going to make less money per item and have to sell more of them in order to not deter consumers. So this is what's happening behind closed doors of how are companies going to absorb it, and what is that reality going to look like for you? In general, because this is a tax on imports, the thinking is that the consumer will pay higher prices, and you'll either pay higher prices because those charges will just get passed along to you, or it's just because supply is going to be less. And so if you have less supply of something, the price goes up. Neither of that seems like a good scenario for the U.S. consumer that has seen inflation over the last several years raise prices on everyday items. And if that's also a promise of this administration to bring prices down, there's a question about how you do that. Now, there is a little bit of variable here. I'm just going to throw it in. We're not going to focus on it too much. The variable is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve right now is keeping rates steady. If the Federal Reserve was to lessen rates, lower rates, so borrowing costs were down and companies and citizens had more access to cash, that could be one way to counteract some of this pricing pressure. It's also another way that you could see inflation come back again. If there's too much cash kind of flowing in the economy, that's a way that things get overheated. Very simplified description of that, but one of the reasons why people are watching the Federal Reserve. For balance, let's listen to a leading Senate voice on this about how Democrats feel about the way that these tariffs have been rolled out and what their purpose is.
Start off by talking about President Trump's tariffs. He calls this an economic revolution. He says that these tariffs are necessary to reset the global economic order and so that the United States is treated fairly on the world stage. How do you respond to that? Do you agree with any part of that?
I don't agree with any part of that. And unfortunately, he's wrecking our economy. I think people have seen their retirement savings on fire, and there he is out on the golf course. That may end up being the most enduring image of the Trump presidency. That is the president out on a golf cart while people's retirement is in flames. The Treasury Secretary saying that people aren't looking at where the retirement savings are. Maybe he doesn't have to. He's got the wealth. He doesn't have to. Maybe the president with his wealth doesn't have to. But what I'm hearing from Californians is those that have just retired, those who are on the eve of retiring, they're terrified of this. And I hope and pray we stay out of recession, but if we head into a recession, it will be the Trump recession. He will completely own it. This is a completely self-destructive economic act that he's engaged in. And it's not just the tariffs. It's also the freezing of funds, the firing of people, the alienation of our allies. In California, I'm hearing from farmers who still haven't recovered market share from the tariffs during the first Trump administration. I'm hearing from people in the tourist industry. You have people from other countries now who don't want to come here, most particularly Canadians. I'm hearing from others, small business people, who are telling me that Canadians are saying, don't send us any more of your products. In fact, we're going to send you back what you've already sent us. It's the whole range of Trump economic policies that are really hurting people.
So that's Adam Schiff again, speaking to Kristen Welker on NBC's Meet the Press. So he does a good job of mapping out the other side of this, which is there is a reaction that's happening from not only American citizens, but countries overseas. And how much does that start affecting the economy in the long term? Is recession actually something that is on the horizon now that wasn't on the horizon before? You may hear Goldman Sachs be mentioned. Goldman Sachs is a large investment firm based in New York City. What's interesting about Goldman Sachs, it makes it a very specific bank, although they tried to get into kind of consumer banking. They're not a consumer bank the same way like JP Morgan Chase is. So it is really investment focused. And earlier this year, Goldman Sachs, there's a variety of different reports that'll come out from analysts from all of these banks. And really, the business media will use these reports as a way to kind of get a lead on a story. You know, Goldman Sachs is a recession percentage point is this many, or, you know, this guy over at JP Morgan Chase says this is the next big media company. And it's research. It's essentially research that these firms are making public. Goldman Sachs back in March in one of their reports put an odds of a recession here in the United States at 20%. Just this past week, Goldman Sachs moved their forecast to about a 50-50 chance of a recession and said about 100% chance if all the tariffs go into effect. Now, we need a little bit more detail, you know, of all the tariffs going into effect. What exactly are we talking about here? Is it the reciprocal tariffs? We want to drill down a little bit into this report. It is one report. It's not a they don't have telepathy, but they're using different parts of the market. They're looking at different financial instruments to get an understanding of like and data. Well, how certain can we be that we could see a recession? What is a recession? Typically, you can be in a recession and not know it. The data will not necessarily show itself until months down the line. Remember, data is always backwards looking, but usually it's two consecutive quarters, so two consecutive 3 month periods of negative GDP, so negative global economic, negative U.S. economic activity. The GDP measures our economic activity overall. We want to see it positive. Usually we want to see above 2%, more or less. That's a better sign of an economy that's growing. If we see a negative, that's a sign of recession. And so what is interesting is that you could actually be in a recession, not know it, get the data for it, talk about a recession and already be out of it before the data will then confirm that you're out of a recession. It's one of those interesting things that you learn as a business journalist that, wait a minute, we don't have real-time data of a recession, but you know that a recession is really not just about the data. It's the way people feel about the economy. And if there are those of you or small businesses that you know that are feeling nervous, anxiety, panic, are making some changes because they're concerned about the future, that's going to have a real impact on the bottom line, not just for them, but for you as a consumer in the immediate. And that can be very difficult to quantify. It can be very hard. There's one side kind of story that I wanted to play for you. I thought this was an interesting soundbite that was getting some attention about why these universal tariffs, why they're going on everybody all the time. And one of the, I'm going to let this soundbite speak for itself, but universal tariffs of 10% for countries or places that don't really seem like they should get the 10%. And so this is the Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, talking about this on CBS. Let's take a listen.
Doesn't stand in the Rose Garden holding up that chart that you helped make. That wasn't actually tariffs. That was actually confusing to investors because it was some kind of other formula and the countries themselves seemed kind of random. Like, why are the Heard and McDonald Islands, which don't export to the United States and are quite literally inhabited by penguins, why do they face a 10% tariffs? Did you use AI to generate this?
No. The idea is
why are they on the list?
Left off. Because the idea, what happens is if you leave anything off the list, the countries that try to basically arbitrage America go through those countries to us. Any country, like we had tariffs, the president put tariffs on China, right, in 2018. And then what China started doing is they started going through other countries to America.
Right.
They just built through other countries through America. And so the president knows that. He's tired of it. And he's going to fix that. So basically, he said, look, I can't let any part of the world be a place where China or other countries can ship through them.
So he ended those loopholes,
these ridiculous loopholes. And now what he's trying to say is, I'm going to fix the trade deficit of the United States of America. It's a national security issue. We need to make medicine. We need to make semiconductors.
Yes.
We need to make ships. We need to have steel and aluminum. Come on. We need the greatness of America to actually be built in America. And he's tired of getting ripped off by the rest of the world.
Okay, but
including penguins. Penguins are on the list. We're tired of getting ripped off. Even the potential of getting ripped off. If that's an island with penguins, we're going to be watching you. But that's actually, there's a really important point there because there was questions of, wait a minute, I thought we went to these Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam to try to pull away some power from China. And we're working with some of these countries to great success. And now we're putting these tariffs on them. And what about all of this? You know, these are great questions. And this is what the secretary is saying, which is that it's not just about the number. It's about the way business is being done, which does not feel fair to this administration. And that would actually be a really important question for critics of the administration too, which is, what is fair? You know, what is fair in this environment? What are we really looking for? What do we want from other countries? Is it that we want our businesses to be able to do better business there? But what is really at the core of this? Amy had an interesting question. Let me go ahead and play this. This is Amy, one of our Scoop members.
Hi, Jenna. This is Amy from Union Springs, New York, and I have a question about the tariffs. I'm wondering what products are made in the U.S. and shipped to other countries where a tariff is charged to us. We hear regularly how difficult it is to make products in America, so I wonder what do we make here that is sold elsewhere with a tariff attached? Thanks for all you do.
Ooh, I love that. Union Springs, that sounds beautiful. It's a great time of year to be on the East Coast as everything starts changing. You get into spring. Thank you, Amy, for that question. It's a great question, which is, well, what about our exports? Like, what actually are we sending overseas? So let me just focus a little bit on what we're sending to China, because that's where, when you hear about farmers being impacted, sometimes it's difficult to connect the dots a little bit about, well, why are farmers being hurt? They're growing things here. And then how is this working with China? So some of the products that we export, this is according to the Washington Post, more than $143 billion in goods to China. And those exports, by the way, don't include to Hong Kong. So that's a little bit less than we did in previous years, but that's quite a sizable amount of money. A lot of what we're exporting to China is farm products. So soy, corn, wheat, so oil seeds and grain, that's really key for the American farmer to export over to China. So when we're talking about the reciprocal tariffs, that's who could eventually get hurt. It's interesting, and Melissa asked this question as well, and Melissa, thank you for sending us a voice memo. I'm going to play a little bit of it. She was asking, if a farmer is exporting to China, but it's for a Chinese company, does the Chinese company then pay that tariff, not the U.S. farmer? So why would the U.S. farmer be hurt? Let's listen to what Melissa asked as well.
Hey there, Smarter Team. I am curious about tariffs, like everybody is these days. What I'm specifically curious about is, after watching that awesome interview that you did with that small business, Emily Lay. I'm curious if tariffs work that way for everything always, meaning does that apply, or is that the way that it operates based on the agreement that you have with maybe the company that you're working with overseas, or is that for everything that...
Let me go ahead and jump in and answer that. What she's asking about is, Emily Lay, again, the founder of Simplified, who we did the interview with, was saying that she had to pay the tariff when she's importing a notebook, for example, into the United States. It's not the Chinese company that's making that good that's paying the tariff. She's paying it because she's the one that wants it inside the country. If she was a Chinese company, so let's say the Chinese company in China is making a planner, a day planner, and they have a arm of their company in the United States, then that same company would be paying the tariff because they're trying to import. So it's really whoever wants the good inside the company, inside the country. So if I'm importing something, I'm going to pay the tariff. If I'm a company that's a foreign company that's making something overseas and bringing it here, and I'm responsible for selling it, I'm going to pay the tariff. So it's whoever, imagine like a basket of goods, whoever is carrying that basket, whoever wants that basket of goods to come across the border, that is the person who's paying the tax. It's the person who desires those products. By the way, where do tariffs go? Who collects them? Customs and Border Protection is going to collect them because it's customs, and it's going to go directly to the U.S. Treasury. So I hope that answers your question, Melissa. And for Amy, that's also an interesting question when it comes to China, because I think I need to do a little bit more research on that. The question would be, if I'm a farmer and I'm selling soybeans and I'm trying to sell to China, there's a Chinese partner on the other side. But remember, most of the businesses in China are related to the Communist Party because it's the largest communist country in the world. So exactly who's absorbing the tariff and what does that look like in their economy? I would just want to be a little bit more specific before answering that question. What the second and third order effects is not just about who's paying it, But if I am getting soybeans from the United States and I'm getting soybeans from another country that doesn't have as high as tariffs, there's no incentive for me to keep my U.S. American farmer partner. Why not go to the other guy and say, hey, why don't you export me more? Because it's going to be cheaper. You look more attractive to me than my previous partner in the United States. And that's how the farmer gets hit. It's not necessarily that he's going to be the one, and I'm just making up him. I'm sure there's wonderful women farmers. See how I did that? Gender stereotyping. I was imagining a guy in a tractor. And here you go. The patriarchy right in our Scoop Insider broadcast. But I'm imagining a farmer out on the field. That's what I'm imagining. I'm thinking he's going to pay the bill. But it's not just about who's paying the bill. It's the incentive to shop there with that person. If there's extra tariffs on a company that you can get a similar product from somewhere else that has less tariffs, then that person with the higher tariffs is hurt. And that's really, it's the deterrence of it. It's the anticipation of that deterrence. It's all of those things despite just the cost. So I hope that's helpful. Thank you, Amy and Melissa for sending in your questions. Let's talk a little bit about Emily Lay, by the way. She filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration. It's very interesting. It's the first of its kind in this particular chapter. And what she's alleging is that President Trump lacks the ability to impose tariffs on China under a federal law called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977. And what she's saying is that the president can only impose these tariffs on China in an emergency setting. Because it's not an emergency setting, then therefore these tariffs should not go into effect. It's an interesting argument. On the flip side of that, the president has been very clear in the way that he has described these tariffs, that they are going into effect because of a national security issue, not just an economic one, a national security issue. He talked about the chronic threat of tariffs last week. What do you think of when you think of chronic, right? Chronic illness. Think about the way that we position our fight against chronic illness, and think about the way that the White House is positioning this as a fight against chronic in a chronic imbalance that's hurting our economy and forever going to harm future generations. It's not allowing us to make goods that we need to make if we needed to in an emergency, like medicine, for example. And therefore, we're going to fix it because of this chronic national emergency that we're dealing with right now. This is what the White House is saying. So that would be their argument back to Emily Lay, which is actually, this is a national emergency and that's why we're putting it in effect. What's happening congruently in Congress, though, and you might hear a little bit about this, is you have lawmakers, some Democrats, some Republicans, that are going to float some legislation. It is true that the U.S. Constitution says that Congress should be responsible for tariffs. Interesting facts. Congress should be responsible for tariffs and has the power to levy tariffs because they're a tax. And Congress is responsible for the purse strings of our government. Doesn't mean the executive branch can't do some things with our money, but really a lot of it has to originate in Congress. So why does the president get to do this? Well, Congress actually passed three different laws that empowered the executive branch to more or less unilaterally put tariffs in place. Those laws were passed in 1930s, the 1960s, and the 1970s. So Congress actually diluted some of its power. The new legislation that could be coming into effect or that is proposed, the new legislation that is proposed would not overturn these previous laws, but would essentially say, okay, if a president wants to pass a tariff or wants to, I shouldn't even say pass, it's the wrong language. If the president wants to put a tariff in place, then Congress gets a certain period of time. So the president would have to notify Congress, I'm doing this. He doesn't have to seek approval from Congress. He can just go ahead and do it. He or she can go ahead and do it. But there would be a 60-day period or some sort of period that would enable Congress to impact that tariff, almost like a little wait and see period about whether or not they want this tariff in place. How exactly it would work, what are the mechanics? This legislation was what's being thought of in Congress right now. So the fact that that's being moved by Republicans as well, it's not just about a Democrats doing that for a Republican administration, is really notable. Would that affect the situation right now? Probably not. Could it affect future tariffs? Yes. The question right now for this week is really a question about timeline. It's how long can the markets endure? How long can the U.S. citizens endure right now, this period of chaos? and get to what could be a quote unquote new reality with higher tariffs? And then what does it look like once we're there? Once we're there, in a practical sense, what sort of pain do we feel? And are we willing to sustain that for a certain period of time if there's indications that the economy will be better in the long run? This is the waiting period we're in right now. So it's the immediate waiting period of the instant reaction. And then it's also the waiting period of, if all of these tariffs do go into effect, what does that actually look like for you and me? Because there's a lot of folks that'll say things like, everything's going to be affected in your life. And maybe that's true. That's true. We saw that with the pandemic. But then what else did we see with the pandemic? There was a new normal that was set and we figured it out. And the American consumer in the last several years has shown an incredible amount of resilience. It's one of the problems that the Federal Reserve is confronting, because we're holding up pretty well. We're continuing to spend. And so the Federal Reserve is like, I don't know if I want to make cash more available to these people, because basically that may flow in too much cash or too much, again, overheat the economy. And that's been one of their deterrents. So it's a really it's a question for you right now. What are you willing to endure? You've heard the explanations from Secretary Bessent, from the president. There's a broader goal here. How long can we wait? And depending on our personal circumstance, that may look very different. So this will be a very fascinating week where a lot can happen. And we're going to watch for these sort of deadlines that come into, especially Wednesday. What happens after Wednesday? What happens after Thursday? What happens after Friday? Has anything happened with Europe or China? What's going on with the market? So we're going to be continuing to watch that. I'm going to leave you with something a little bit more inspirational, though, because the astronauts that were stuck in space, you know, they said, well, someone was always coming to get us. But for all of us back here on Earth, we all were kind of wondering about that. You know, you go somewhere for a couple of days, you don't pack that much. Then you wind up somewhere nearly 10 months. I mean, that's a real big pivot. And so, you know, what is the lesson from that? Astronaut Sunny Williams, I want to make sure I got her name correct. I'm sorry. I'm so used to calling her Sunny, like she's my friend. It is Sunny Williams. I got to trust myself. Sunita is her full name. We call her Sunny. Sunny Williams, who's been in space before. This wasn't her first trip. And she was asked at a press conference last week, it was after our scoop, about what is really the lesson that she would like to share, especially for some of the young students in her home area that were concerned about her. I want you to take a listen to what she had to say here.
It's like you all mentioned, it's slightly unique, and there's some lessons learned to it. And part of that is just resilience and being able to take a turn that was unexpected and make the best of it. And I think that is the biggest thing that I want to, pass down, particularly to kids who think that their life should be the straight arrow to what you want to do, and you're just going to get there. Well, you know, sometimes it takes some turns, some rights and some lefts, and you just keep focused on your goal and other doors might be open for you. So I think that's the biggest message.
I mean, what poise, right? To be able to say, you know, life takes a couple twists and turns. You go somewhere for a couple of days, you wind up there for almost a year. It's fine. But what a great attitude. By the way, also in that press conference, she was like, yeah, I've been back at, on Earth for about a week and I just went for a 3-mile run. I feel pretty good. You're like, they're just not built like us, you guys. They're just different. They're unique. They're amazing. They're astronauts. And what a great thing to think about, though, in a time when there's a lot, it feels very chaotic to think about, okay, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. How do I pivot and make the best of it? Easier said than done in different situations. And I don't want to come to you with being overly optimistic. I want to make sure that we're covering multiple sides. I saw some requests for different economists. I think that would be great to have different economists to weigh in and talk to us a little bit about history. What have we seen with tariffs? You know, what is important to point out here, though, is that oftentimes when tariffs were imposed, you know, the historical setting of that really matters. And one of the things, I was just talking about this with a friend of mine, who's also, by the way, a supporter of Smarter News. Thank you very much to Jessica. I was talking to her about this. I said, you know, a lot of what I'm seeing in the news is that programs and policies put in place in this post-World War II period have now had the decades of work and track record to be judged. And in this period of time, it's a moment where there's a great reflection on what we've done in the last several decades in this post-World War II period and wonder, is this what we want? That came during a very specific time in history. And so can that apply to now? Are we in a, are we effectively in a new world that needs new policy? And it's a kind of a broader philosophical question. And I think it's worth taking a little time to dig through that. So I don't want to come across overly optimistic. I just want to be sure that you are seeing both sides, and the sort of hyperbolic nature in the press right now is, and that these short, again, short sound bites are not particularly helpful for that. If there is a broader plan in place that is carrying out, are we actually in the middle of something that is extremely historic? Again, high risk, but potentially high reward. And the question is, well, what in the meantime, though, short in the time span of a country, but perhaps long in our lives, are we willing to endure for a change that some believe is necessary and others don't believe is necessary at all? So we're going to sort through all of that. We're going to work through it together. I appreciate your support on Smarter News, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you again to Amy and Melissa for sending in those questions. Those voice memos are great. We love hearing from you. You can do that, scoop@smarternews.com. Please do so. And we'll continue to keep an eye on what's happening this week with all the other big stories. I know we focus really on the economy today. That is the story of the week. And we'll keep you posted as all this news develops. So more to come. Insiders, be ready for this delivered to your inbox with a calendar of events and a bunch of links that I think will be very helpful for this week as you're, you know, perusing the news over coffee and looking for something interesting. And thank you again for your support of Quick, Concise, Nonpartisan, Smarter News. Have a great week, you guys. Another historic moment we're experiencing together, and I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else. All right, guys. Bye.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.